Okay, great. We'll probably have some people joining us as we go, but we want to get started. This is actually our 220th session. We do these every 2 weeks. We do them in tranches of 10, and we're in the 21st cycle. And we'll be winding this cycle up probably in the next month or so as we approach the annual all-grantee meeting. Our next session will be, which is 221, it'll be on November 6th. So any of you who might want to showcase your program, either November 6th or on the next one, the 20th, just to drop Heather a line. I'll mention her email a couple of times, hkballou, that's hkballou, at eicc.edu. Heather is our point person for whether you want to be added or you have a friend who wants to be added, you're not getting the notes, and you'd like to get on our list. If you're on our list, you'll get all the notes on Friday. You'll get the invites, and you'll get any special news that might come along. And today, I've got some special news for everyone. News from Washington. Now, Heather isn't in today, so I get the privilege of telling everyone that it's about time to announce the awards for the FY20 Environmental West Coast Development Job Training. I heard from headquarters that the announcements are supposed to be made on October 24th, which is tomorrow. Now, with the caveat that this can go on, could be delayed at the last minute. There might be some hiccups or something, or it may just come out. And the way these usually come out, Rachel doesn't have a lot of control over it. Sometimes it comes out of public affairs. It may come out of grants.gov. They'll send her an email. They'll put it on their website. We usually get the news pretty early. One way or another, we'll get it from one of our web sources, or from EPA will send us, or it might even be a regional coordinator. So, but what the general thing is, it's the announcements will be made shortly, and we'll come back to this and talk a little bit about that, of what you should be doing now in light of those announcements. And it's been a long wait. This is a very strange year because of the way they changed appropriations and changed regulations, and so they wanted to get this grant going, but they had to wait till FY20, which started October 1st, and they did what they said they were going to do, and we're kind of going along schedule as we had expected last spring. So we're going to come back to this in a second, but I wanted to pass that along to everyone. The other announcement, of course, is an HMTRI EPA announcement about the all-grantee meeting, which is, again, very different than it's ever been. It's going to be a pre-meeting to the Brownfields National Conference on December 9th for the all-grantee meeting, and then the 10th, 11th, and 12th will be, 11th through the 13th will be, the all-grantee meeting will be on Tuesday, and then Wednesday, Thursday, and Friday will be the national conference. So what we're suggesting, everyone come in on Monday and see if they can register. Fortunately, we're going to the West Coast. This is in Los Angeles, so most of us going time zones to the West, we can take a morning flight and get there and still register on Monday, which would be a big help because our meeting on Tuesday is going to start right off the block at 8 o'clock. So if you can get into Los Angeles and get over to the convention center, you might even want to go directly to the convention center and take care of your registration for the conference. They've told us that to come to our meeting on Tuesday morning, you'll probably have to have a badge. That's a little different than it's been in the past, but that's what we're hearing. So just to be safe, you may want to register for the national conference on Monday. And then Tuesday morning, come on over. You can come directly to our all-grantee meeting, which will be also at the convention center. It'll be in the same place. And I'll talk to you a little bit about that and how that schedule is going to go. We're going to go for a full day on Tuesday, and then Wednesday and Thursday are usually the power days at the Brownfields Conference. They've got a great display area. HMTRI is going to have a display, which we'll be talking to you soon about. It's going to be not an HMTRI display. It's going to be an Environmental Workforce Development Job Training display, primarily about our grantees. So what we're going to be requesting is people bring materials not only to the all grantee meeting, but to put out on the display, and they could use it as a base, and they can work the booth or sit at the booth and talk to people as they come by, whether they're employers, use it as a base of operation. So we're taking that orientation this year, and we'll always have someone at the booth. So if you have materials, you can bring it to the booth, and if you want to go to the sessions, we can definitely promote your program to whoever comes by. So in terms of our all grantee meeting, which will be on Tuesday, the interesting thing as we started to develop this meeting, originally we were going to have it all by ourselves, and Sharon Beard said, well, it would be interesting to combine our meetings, or at least part of our meetings, because we have an NIHS program. It's called the Environmental Career Worker Training Program, which many of you may be associated with or familiar with. It's a sister program. NIEHS, National Institute of Environmental Health Sciences, is oriented towards health and safety. We're oriented towards environmental remediation. But the overlap is that to do environmental remediation, you have to do it in a safe health and safety guidelines, using best available technology, approved practices. On the converse side, so we're teaching health and safety. HAZWOPR is a mandatory requirement. We have several other. Most people use OSHA 10 or 030 with health and safety aspects. They might have some other health and safety programs like confined space, asbestos, which is an EPA program. It's a healthy safety remediation program. NIHS, while they're teaching health and safety, they're also involved in environmental remediation. So they're doing some of the same things that we are. And their program is oriented completely different than the EPA program. It's funded out of a different agency, and the grants are, while our grants are individual grants to organizations, they tend to grant much larger grants over a longer period of time. Ours would be more responsible to, easier for small nonprofits, smaller organizations, for startups to get into. Theirs is a little bit more oriented towards more established large organizations. But we do have this overlap. So we decided we would do the morning with issues and best practices associated with environmental workforce development, and then we'd have lunch together. We're going to bus over to the California Community Foundation, and we're going to meet up with the NIHS worker, career worker training grantees. And we're going to spend the afternoon talking about things of common interest. These are things like retention, certainly drug testing, transportation, things that we've talked about on this PLC, but also are very much interest to them and to us. And we'll get a different perspective from the way they approach some of these issues than we do. So we'll be going back and forth, and we'll be having mentors in all of these. In total, we'll have about 8 breakouts. We'll have 4 in the morning and 4 in the afternoon. And we'll be sending out requests for mentors. We consider our more experienced grantees as mentors. They have been there, done that. They have a wealth of experience. They've made mistakes. They've had strategies that really work. And we collect those strategies and call them best practices because they've tried them and they really work well for them. So we like to spread the news to other grantees, particularly and especially new grantees who we hope to have attending this meeting also. So that'll go in the afternoon, and then we'll bus back to the convention center in time for 4 o'clock regional meetings. And EPA has said that they feel this is a mandatory meeting for all grantees, it's all of the regions will have open houses. And here is a place where you get to meet all the players in your region. And this is especially important to finding who the primary employers are, who the ARC grantees are. These are the sister EPA grantees, the cleanup, the revolving loan funds, and the assessment pilots. And they have similar programs to ours, assessing where the bad sites are, developing cleanup plans, actually getting involved in cleanup and hiring cleanup contractors and using establishing revolving loan funds to do cleanup. So it's very important to spend some time just circulating around in the region and introducing yourself to who in the region are getting EPA grants, who in the region are maybe contractors. So it's a great time to spend some time. So the EPA feels that this everyone should attend that. In the afternoon, there is a EJ caucus, Environmental Justice Caucus, and this is a very popular. It is optional. It's a big open house. It's one of the largest attended events at Brownfields, and everyone comes to the EJ caucus. And here you'll see a variety of people who are active in their community trying to implement change, trying to promote environmental justice, and it'll be attended by the technical people, the insurance people, the government people, and that's an optional event that will be announced when you get to the conference. So what I'm basically saying is Tuesday is going to be a real busy day. If you could get in on Monday, that'd be great. HMTRI is going to reimburse hotels, as those of you who have already signed up know, Monday night and Tuesday night. There was a scramble that we had a block, and the block is full. So we've got a good turnout. Now, if you're a new grantee or you get funded and you want to come to this meeting, I would go and see if you can, when you make your hotel reservations, and I'll put in the notes this week what I did last week, how you could register for the HMTRI block. I am not sure if they've closed that block because we've exceeded our number, but it's worth a try. And when you start arranging your hotel, it'll ask for an authorization code on the second screen and put HMTRI in there. Now, if it doesn't work, just back off and don't do anything. And we're going to see what we could do one-on-one and contact Heather, again, HKBallou, B-A-L-L-O-U, at EICC.edu, and we'll handle those on an individual basis. So what will happen is HMTRI can pick up at least Monday and Tuesday night hotels, and then depending on how long you want to stay, you have to register for the conference no matter what. But if you're an academic, it's $50. If you're a nonprofit, it's a little bit more. So that's not real expensive. I guess the big expense is the hotel on the number of days you stay. Monday and Tuesday is paid for. When we're getting into basically the cheapest hotel, but they're still expensive. Wednesday and Thursday nights, I think, are about $250. So it ends up about, if you stay for the full conference, about a little $500. And then, of course, your transportation to Los Angeles. So that's going to be all spelled out in the notes, but we're just, and most of you hopefully have signed up. We went on a big splurge to try to get everyone signed up we could. I expect this is going to continue, and I'm not sure what the meeting planners and the hotel people will say in terms of room availability, but in the worst case, we'll figure something out for new grantees that are funded that want to. It's really important if you're a new grantee to come to this conference and also to the all grantee meeting, because here's a chance to see your regional coordinators, to see people and make contacts to people who have been doing this for 10, 15, 20 years and know all the ropes. And it's a great opportunity. So again, with that, I'm speaking to those of you who are brand new and get some really good news tomorrow. So say you get the news and it's really good, then we talk about what should you do now. Of course, most of us will jump for joy, but we want to make sure there's certain things we start putting into place. Certainly you want to contact your boss or the president of the organization or the chancellor or whoever. Particularly they may contact the administrator that's on the grant proposal. It's the authorized contact, and they'll send them concurrently. You may find out before they will. You'll find out in the public announcement. They may get a delay, but you could tell them it's coming. And then the wheels start to turn. What do we do next? And, you know, when do the checks start to arrive? When can we start submitting vouchers? And there are a few things you have to do. Of course, certainly you want to spread the word with your partners, those that are mentioned in a grant particularly, those who are going to be leverage partners. It might be a workforce investment board that you've contacted as you were developing the proposal. It might be a nonprofit that's partnering with you. It might be your trainers. Tell them it's rolling, and it looks like we'll be continuing if you're an existing grantee, or if you're a new grantee, this is a whole new ball game. And you may want to pull out your grant, your proposal, because it's time to relook at it. It's been a while. And this is an opportunity for both of you who are existing grantees and those of you who are new grantees. You go through this process called work. You develop finalized work plans. And if you committed to something that you now have second thoughts after listening to these PLCs, or talking to other grantees, that maybe we overcommitted ourselves, or maybe our budgets we didn't tweak them right, or we didn't allow for something, or we have to hire some additional instructors. This is an opportunity. You may want to tweak your curriculum, because between then and now you did a needs assessment and you found out that what you may have put in the proposal isn't so much in demand, but it is. But there's something else that you found or were approached by some employers that really want you to put a course in there. This is a great opportunity when you're working with your regional coordinators and the grants people to do a little tweaking and finalize your work plan. There's other points in the grant cycle when you could do this, but this is an opportune time before you even get started. And so what you'll want to do, you'll be getting a grants package from your regional coordinator and the grants people, and that'll have all these instructions in it. They'll verify that you're in the SAM system, the system for administration management of grants, and they'll arrange to finalize your work plans. And then, of course, you'll be in touch with your regional coordinators. You may hear them from them first, as a matter of fact. You'll want to sign up for this joint meeting if you can to get into Brownfields. One interesting thing about the way grants work is it takes a while to get through the bureaucracy to get your work plan finalized. You're going to get an authorization finally to spend funds. You'll get, now your organization is going to have to sign off that you really want this grant, so that it's just not, okay, well, here it is and start spending money. You're going to have to accept the grant and the commitments that go along with the grant. So it might take a little while to get all that done, hopefully, you know, before the end of the year. There is a provision that you could spend money 90 days prior to when the final authorization comes through. So if you're in a situation where you're a new grantee or you're an old grantee and you've spent most of your funds, you can back off and submit those expenses associated with the all grantee meeting and the national meeting once your final grant is processed. So you could talk to your regional coordinator about that if you want to. So let's look at the timeline. As I said, awards tomorrow or hopefully this week. You'll get a letter of acceptance. You'll be going to your people. You'll be assembling your partners, your instructors, your contractors. You may need to go out on bid for consultants. You can start planning your scheduling. And when you start looking at those, this whole November, December time is a period of review, finalizing work plans, getting your funding authorized, setting up your accounting, working with your finance department, certainly congratulating the grant writers who did a great job. And when you get that official notice, it's time to get to work. You've hopefully had a post-award meeting that you're saying we're on our way and this is what we're going to do. So now we're into January, and that January to March period in 2020. And this is when the work begins. And it's not a bad time to get your grant rolling, because when we look at this, your first graduating class will be in the spring, which is a good hiring time for many of our graduates. So it's not a bad time to start. And you can be starting early, but you want to be doing in January everything you said you're going to be doing about community awareness and marketing your program. You're going to be getting your leverages services, because you're going to be developing your schedule from beginning of training and recruiting all the way to graduation. So you'll have everything laid out between community awareness, recruitment, screening and assessment, and then your training, retention, your placement. So you're going to be doing all of these things in that January, March, as you start your training in February, March, your first cohort. Word of caution in this very beginning period, particularly for new grantees, this is the toughest cohort you're going to have. And you have to be very careful. We've talked about this in previous PLCs. If you go out and rush to fill up your first cohort because you might be afraid you're not going to fill your class, say you have 20 seats available, your biggest mistake is to go out and get not the best people that are suited to be in your program. We want to get the best deserving, the most needy, and also the most likely to succeed. So if you're on a open speaker, you have to be real quiet. So this is the kind of, we like to keep open mics, but this happens sometimes when these microphones are very sensitive and will pick up everything in the room. So if you're on a open mic, just kind of go in the other room. So the word of caution, if I could give any word of caution from past experiences of grantees, is be very careful about that first class. Be very careful, and if you overcompensate to only get the best, play it very safe that first time, because that will set the course for the rest of your program. If you get into a class where they're not compatible, they're not placeable, they end up with real issues that you're not ready for, you could be in big trouble. And this happens to most programs that fail or don't do well or are not able to continue, is they get in over their head the first time. Play it safe and then get more adventurous as you go. Get your second cohort. You could find out that first cohort was so easy and easy to place, you could take some chances on your second one. But again, be very, very careful. Recruit and assess, and be very have lots of orientation nights so that you have lots to choose from. So that would be the word of advice for that. Then when we start talking, you're going to be starting your first cohort in, say, March, and then that's also the time when we'll be talking about quarterly reports and future PLCs, which is very important. Most people will say as soon as you get your grant, you want to start thinking about re-upping and getting your next grant. So from the very beginning, set your habits to be the best you can be, and be very careful about that, because once you get started, if you start slipping on whether they're quarterly reports or how you're doing things, it's hard to recover from that. So you want to start off with the most disciplined program you can, getting your reports in on time or ahead of time, being as precise as you can, working closely with your regional coordinator. So that brings us up to April, and we're now in this placement phase where your first cohort is being placed, and you're working on your second cohort. So this is, again, when panic starts to set in. Hopefully, as we've coached all along, you want to be, as soon as that training begins, you want to be working with your employers, and you want to have them as instructors. You want to have them bonded with the program. You want to have them providing maybe some protective gear. You want to ask a lot of your employers, because the more they are involved in your program, the more they're going to want your students. You're going to want to have them come to graduation. You're going to want to have them mingle with whether they're certain nights where you have open house nights. You want to have this mixing of your grantees before they graduate with your employers, and you want to get, and you find out your employers meet some people and say, this guy over here he's pretty good. I'd like to talk to him when he graduates. The downside of that is if he really needs people bad enough and you train everyone to HAZWOP, he might try to steal them away from your program, which has happened when we've had hurricanes or disasters and people have received their HAZWOP training and maybe they got into some other training, and the local employers need people really bad. So, but again, that's a good problem to have. So you want to place them, as many as you can, as soon as you can. If you could place them before they graduate, even better. So this is also after that first cohort, and going into that second cohort is a good time to look at program adjustments. By that time, you'll have plenty of time to mingle with other grantees, been on some of these PLCs and heard from other grantees and what they found works. You've had probably some problems that you're looking for advice for, and hopefully someone's got some good ideas to try. And you may find that it's a little different than what your grant says. Maybe you're teaching a course that you want to tweak or do something differently too. It's a good time to go back to your regional coordinator and say, we had a good cohort, but we can make it a lot better. And we've revisited our labor market assessments, and we found out that we're training people in this area, and it turns out we've got this tremendous demand for, say, asbestos removal, or we have this tremendous demand for lead because we've got a lot of old houses, and it just turns out there's a lot of demolition, deconstruction going on, or a lot of recycling going on in our city. So we would really like to tweak this. So it's a good time to do, after that first cohort, a mid-course reorientation. And, of course, you're going to run through very successful and be placing students. And, of course, as I said before, you don't want to get too far into this grant before you start thinking of the next grant and what you're going to do. And you're going to be wanting to talk about program sustainability and what you can do there. Does anyone have any questions on how this is all flowing in the next year or two if you're successful in getting some grant money? Any questions, or people who have been through it that have any suggestions to make?
Well, Mike.
Yes, sir.
Yeah, this is Ken Alexander, Recycle Force. How are you?
Hey, Ken.
Hey, I heard you mention about maybe getting with our regional coordinator if we see a demand in a certain area. I have seen an influx of demand in the need for OSHA construction 10-hour. Because
right.
In the state of Indiana, we're building a tunnel 250 feet underground, and they'll be doing that for the next five to 15 years. And so there's a possibility that we could switch tracks from HAZWOPER 40-hour to 10-hour construction, 1926.
Well, this is the HAZWOPER is mandatory under the Environmental Workforce Development Job Training Program, but that's okay. You need HAZWOPER if there's any hazardous materials anywhere around. So even if they were digging it and all of a sudden they ran into something, your guys would be called on to be able to work, to be on site. If you don't have HAZWOPER, you can't even go on site. So I would stick with HAZWOPER. Now, many of our grantees do 10 or 30 hour. I would say a majority of them do 10-hour because, and it's 10-hour construction, but it's very heavily weighted to health and safety. 30-hour is a little more intense than that. Anyone else out there do 10 or 30-hour?
This is Ronnie from West End. I do 10, and we actually were looking because we were reached by a contractor based out of Harlem. They do some independent contracting for OSHA 30, but currently right now we do OSHA Confined Space Entry, OSHA 40 Hazwoper, and we're negotiating right now just a good cost to come in and do the class. But this is about only my fourth month in as a program manager, so we're trying to weigh our options just in regards of, like, is it really going to be worth it? Because upon completion of our students in our program, we run 5 weeks, they get 12 certifications. So they get the OSHA 10, OSHA 40, OSHA Confined Space Entry, Forklift Operator, Specialist Worker Handler. We just added Bloodborne Pathogens, Lockout, Tagout, Aerial, Basics, and Scaffolding, as well as a Scissor Lift.
Wow.
Yeah, that's good. They get all those. So we're thinking it make sense to cut out those and probably add an OSHA 30, you know. But you know, that's a question we were asking ourselves as well too.
You nailed it. OSHA 10 or OSHA 30, definitely. Confined space, and Ken, I would recommend confined space, particularly in tunneling.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah,
that'd be a good one. Forklift is not bad. You already do forklift, don't you?
So, yeah, we do.
Do you do lead?
Yeah, we do that.
Lead?
Lead?
Yep. Lead depends on, yeah, you may, well, I don't know, Ken may do lead. It depends on your community. You know, I live in Raleigh, and there's not a lot of old houses around here. But in your urban areas, like where Buddy lives, lead is probably a predominant course. That's why we ask people to do needs assessments, because what's good in Bedford may not be good in Raleigh or Florida.
Right.
Now they may do something in mold down there. I would say there's a trinity here: the Hazwoper 1910-120, the confined space, and the OSHA 10 or 30. And I think there's a split between people who do 10 and 30. I think that's, I don't know about pathogens. That depends on if you've got a lot of hospitals around and they're hiring your people. You know, that's a local judgment call depending on your advisory committee and your employers. But, yeah, Ken, I think that's a smart move is what you're talking about. I think that's
thank you.
Congratulations.
About the confined space entry, that's a key component to going underground and to have that. So the other thing is like, I mean, if they do get employed, it's not like we train them in OSHA 10 construction and the Hazwoper 40, but they get employment in a different area, we still count that in our numbers.
Right.
And, you know, as employed, I guess that's a no-brainer right there.
Right. Yeah, forklift is a good one. And, you know, it depends where you're at. A lot of, if you're down in Florida, you know, things like Flagger and stuff are key because they're doing a lot of construction projects and a lot of remediation. And you might, depends on who's coming into your program, you know, what kind of jobs they're going to be getting. But and everyone's a little different, but that's right.
Mike, this is Pam at ECA in Philadelphia. We do 10, 30, and Hazwoper, and because of the lead in Philly, we find there's a lot of call for Hazwoper.
Yeah. 10 and 30? Do you do both construction and?
Construction, we do 10, and we do fall prevention.
Oh, okay, fall prevention.
So that's 30, right?
Right. Good. It all depends on how much time you have, you know, in your curriculum. But excellent, yeah. And you all aren't too involved in asbestos and lead. You know, asbestos and lead, they got their own problems in terms of getting certified trainers, too. So some people go in that direction, some in others.
There's a whole thing in the Philly schools around asbestos right now where they just did a major rehab of the school, and they couldn't open because they found when they did the rehab, asbestos went through the HVAC system. So it's really bad. So lead and asbestos are very much in the news in this city right now.
Yeah.
Yeah, it that's one of those I call them pollutant of the month. They're sometimes they're long term and sometimes they're flash in the pans. But you're exactly when they first started doing asbestos, they made the problems worse. So all of a sudden, well, gee, maybe we could just paint over it, or we could cover it up, or you know, in situ type of remediation. But you're exactly right. And the question, and you pointed out a good point, that what's good today and this year, your graduating class, may not be good next year. So don't feel bad about reorienting or doing what Ken's thinking of doing. And what you'll want to do is talk to your regional coordinator about that, just to make sure that they're good with it. And they almost always say yes, as long as it's on the list of that priority list of that EPA's. The only things that are not on it are air is not being funding this program, so I would stay away from those programs. Water, they're funding, but not at a high level. So anything to do with hazardous materials is, you know, solid waste, hazardous materials. Almost all the money that goes into this program come from OSWA, off solid waste and hazardous materials. So they're going to be encouraging those types of training and programs. So I was going to get into what happens if we don't want to hear about the unthinkable today, but if the unthinkable, and maybe we'll save that for next week. What do you do if you don't get good news tomorrow? And there are going to be 20 grants, and EPA is pretty savvy about how they administer these grants. They may look at those who absolutely have to have it this round, and I don't know. They're going to give some to new. They're going to give some to existing. They're going to give some who need a lifeline for now. They'll certainly, in every case, they're going to look at exemplary programs. So it's hard to tell how these are going to fall. In the past, they've pretty fallen pretty kind of equally. They've gotten maybe four or five new ones that have never had a grant. They may have some people who have had grants and are re-upping, and they'll have a bunch of renewals. So it's hard to tell that it comes out. We'll talk some next time about what happens if you're not on that list and you don't get funded this year. There are alternatives, and whether it's linking up with a community college or whether it's incorporating or retrenching your program into another program, there are alternatives. And people know, they've been here and done this, and they've been successful. So they do come back from, I don't want to say come back from the dead. They've been able to put their program into a lower state, and then they've come back. Buddy, you've been with this program for a long time, haven't you? And you've seen the
Yes, well, I'm laughing. I wanted to really wait till you get to the end to make our announcement, because I know you know pretty much who's getting the award, and the announcement is going to be made tomorrow. We just learned yesterday that they'll be making an announcement here in New Bedford tomorrow at 2 o'clock in regards to receiving the grant.
Well, that's a good sign, I would say, buddy.
I think it's a doggone good sign.
I don't think they're going to come and say, hey,
Mike, I wanted to say before I said that, though, is that I want to thank you over the years for having done this, and all the people that have contributed to these conversations that I call that are really off the cuff and beautiful, that I listen quite often, and I learn a lot. I got my pad right here like I always do, and I'm taking notes, even though I know you're going to send me them. But this is a very important service that's provided, and even though I've been around a long time, I still listen to you because you talk about it right from reality, and that's what people need to hear, how to do this, how to stay current and go forward and do a good program. And so far what I've heard, everybody's doing that, and that has to be attributed to the service that you guys provide. So thank you.
Well, you know, Buddy's been through some hard times. I mean, you've survived when there was no money, and that says a lot. Now, this is the kind of program they love. It's a photo op. It'll be interesting to see if you get the administrator or the regional coordinator will certainly be there. There may be probably at least the regional administrator.
Well, when we started the process, Mike, Mrs. Dunn, she was the regional coordinator for the Boston area, and we're so proud that she was here with us and got us going, and now she's the assistant administrator for the country. So she did her work helping us out, and we did our job, and I think we're going to be successful.
Photo ops are exciting things. We did a workshop up in New York, and the region, it had nothing to do with necessarily EPA. They wanted to give them some money, and, of course, they came in with their huge checks, and they came in with the cameras and everything. It kind of disrupted our whole workshop, but they wanted to give them $25,000, and, you know, they never overlook the power of politics, I guess, is something to think about. Well, I kept you 50 minutes over, but I'm happy, buddy, and I hope all of you get good news. And
I will share it back with you. Believe that. I owe that. You know, you guys are there for us, and we've got to be back there to let you know what we're doing. And I'll be back.
Well, you guys all contribute. You guys become mentors, and so we rely heavily on our mentors. So we'll talk to you all on the 6th, and good luck to all of you, and thanks for tuning in.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mike.
Talk to you all later.
Bye. Thanks, Mike.
Yes.